Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Wednesday, November 25th, 2009. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
The week has been marked by thin volume, volatile holiday trade. We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Elmore, Senior Agricultural Economist for Pioneer Hybrid International in Johnston, Iowa. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Let's begin today's program with this question. This week, CME Group retreated on a plan to settle deferred corn and soybean contracts in the electronic versus the pit after traders gave the exchange an earful. Locals and spread traders were worried that electronic settlements with thinner volume would not accurately reflect the markets. What is CME Group trying to accomplish? Kurt Kimmel.
That's a good question. Most of the volume's electronic now, and it's kind of silly to see electronic trade pass the pit session, then go back and close everything up according to what the pit trade ended up for the day. So we should just go ahead and put it all electronic and be done with it.
Sherman, numbers out this week suggest that the real U.S. unemployment rate is in excess of 17%. Versus the official 10.2% figure. The bigger number takes into account folk who have stopped looking for work as well as those who are now underemployed. The Dow has generally ignored unemployment numbers this year, but do you think that will continue?
I think we need to, you know, keep the jobs coming on. The jobless rate has been, you know, stagnant. Without having good jobs, I think the economy is going to stutter slowly. So I don't know if the Dow will continue on up without having a good job report.
Pete, the reason I ask this is I wonder if a pullback in the Dow at this time, if we were to see it, would equate to a pullback in commodity futures.
Well, it could, but you have to look also at the crude oil. You have to look at the dollar, you have to look at the metals, and you have to look at the economies of what do they think the U.S. is as far as the rest of the world. And right now, I just don't see the economy doing that well. Maybe the banks and Wall Street are, but the common man on the street is fearful of spending anything because of either lack of a job or worried about having one in a month or two.
We've had thin, low-volume, holiday, volatile trade this week. To what degree, Kurt, do you trust it for price discovery heading into next week?
Well, a trade's a trade, and there's business that took place at those price levels. Probably the most erratic session for the grains has been historically the Friday after Thanksgiving, so we'll go through that. But it'll be back to business quickly Sunday night in electronic trade, and see what Monday brings. But it's opportunity. It's opportunity to buy and opportunity to sell, and those opportunities are there if you're prepared for them.
Kurt, I'm going to stay with you. Monday's export shipping report showed an amazing 73 million bushels of soybeans. However, with that bullish news, soybean bull spreads did not work all that well. Is the market trying to tell us something?
Well, the numbers at the beginning of the week are shipments, what we're shipping out. We need to see big numbers there because those are beans that we sold. Once they're shipped and gone, they're presumed they're sold unless they reject them when they hit their destination. But there was tons and tons of boats lined up to be from clear back last fall, and basically they ran 24/7 filling up those boats, and that's what they got loaded up and shipped out that week.
Sherman, in your estimation, does China continue to buy U.S. beans, and if so, for how much longer into this marketing year?
That's a good question, Dave. I mean, they've been really surprising the trade, I think, but with their appetite for the beans. A lot of people are starting to think maybe that's going to start to slow down. But for right now, I mean, the U.S. is still the only place for them to come to. So I think we have a window of opportunity for the bean market to stay high until the South American crop starts coming on, which looks like it's supposed to be quite a bit larger than last year from the extra acres. Weather down there right now looks pretty good. So I think there's an opportunity for the beans to stay up, especially if China keeps on buying.
Sherman, will stay with you. Do you expect that China will cancel some portion of their U.S. buys in favor of sourcing South American beans?
They usually do. I mean, it's you can't, you know, always trust everything that has happened, but it has happened quite a bit in the past. So if it does happen, I don't know if you should be too surprised by it.
Pete, this week USDA showed that 6% of U.S. beans are still out in the field. And based on the November crop production report, that's roughly 199 million bushels. Do those beans get harvested, or are we far enough along that we can say with some degree of certainty those beans are going to stay there?
Those will get harvested. Farmers don't let them sit, and they will get harvested. If you look back in previous times like this, back in the 70s and even in the mid-80s, beans were harvested as late as February and March with very little loss, and those will get harvested.
Kurt, what did the seasonals point to for beans next week?
Well, traditionally, we've been firm into this first, second week of December. With the inflow of money coming from the investment side of the equation and bean harvest being wrapped up, we feel probably this up move can last into year end.
Sherman, what will crude oil do between now and the end of the year?
Well, the crude oil had a nice $2 rally. At least that's what it was up when I left the office today on an EIA number that was out this morning. It showed a million barrel build. There's nothing really bullish in the crude oil market itself because of the high supplies we have. But with the lower dollar and the fund money and the spec money wanting to come in and buy commodities, I mean, gold made a new all-time high today. The dollar made a new all-time low today. Crude oil rallied. I mean, they came in, they bought the grains. I think it's, kind of up to where the fund money wants to keep putting their money at. So it could keep on rallying some.
Pete, for corn, it's demand, demand, demand. Do you look for livestock exports to pick up into the first quarter of next year potentially? And I would imagine that would mean that if that were to happen, that we might have a little bit more corn demand to go along with it.
Well, they have been increasing in the pork sector, and I do expect beef to be a little bit better into that first quarter. So that I think that demand will stay there and stay good.
Meanwhile, here at home, livestock has not kept up its leg of the three-legged stool when it comes to demand. Is that going to improve?
I don't know that that will improve with our 10% unemployment and people afraid to spend money. So I think that's the weak part of the cattle and the livestock.
Kurt, what do you think the EPA will do with the ethanol blending rate next week?
Well, that's been a great debate. I believe December 1st was the cutoff date, but there's quite a bit of pushing and pulling to maybe extend that until then get some more studies accomplished. So I imagine you'll see some type of rain delay announcement next week.
So nothing along the lines of maybe pushing it a little bit, maybe 10% to 12%, and then look at the rain delay?
We don't believe so. We believe they're going to buy some more time and see which way the wind's blowing before going down that path.
Meanwhile, the ethanol blending part of the equation has been the star lately.
Yeah. You go back 6-8 months ago, I've never dreamt that we would actually pump it up to $4.2 billion on the usage side. We're back in the black for some of these operations. We're seeing ethanol company stocks start to creep up here. And so we're in the opinion here that we're going to go full steam here over the next few months as these guys get their feet back on the ground.
Sherman, what about corn exports, which have been nothing, and I repeat, nothing to write home about?
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. They have been pretty dismal, I mean, compared to what the beans have had. But, I mean, if you look at it, globally, the stocks-to-use ratio for corn is pretty tight on a 40-year average. We're down towards the low end of that. So to me, that means there's still some longer-term upside potential maybe, or at least not a lot of downside potential for the corn. The lower dollar is definitely going to help, but we need to keep using moving some corn out with the exports.
I wonder, Sherman, whether or not we're going to have to see softer prices in the futures to move corn in the export chain.
We might, but there again, if the dollar continues to erode, I don't think it's going to go straight down, but if it continues to erode some, I think that'll help. But we might have to have some pullbacks into the corn market to get that done.
Pete, as we're recording the show today, there is snow in the forecast for parts of the Corn Belt. Not expected really to stick, but it is a reminder that it is relatively late in this harvest season, record late in some ways, if you think about it. At least in the modern era, I know that corn harvesting in the day went into January, but it's not our mode now. Do you think that standability will become an issue at some point during the harvest season, trying to pick up the last part of the harvest?
Well, I think you always have that problem on late stuff. I think what we have today that we didn't have back when I was growing up, where you did harvest into February every year, is the machinery we have today, even if it's in a mess, it takes a lot longer, but it pretty much gets about everything that's out there.
So not much corn will be missed on a standability issue, you think?
I don't think much will be missed that's in the field.
Kurt, National Agricultural Statistics Service has announced that at the end of the month, when it makes its new projection, it will treat corn in the field as if it were on farm, even though it's not in the bin. And yields will be based on surveys of producers. How might this play out in the December crop production report as traders look at it?
Well, I guess we're going to find out as we get to that benchmark. I know that last year we had producers in northern Illinois harvest till December and didn't get back in the field till March, and they found very little yield reduction on the corn that was still standing in the field, except where there were snow banks or along the fence row or hedges where the deer got a hold of it. But it's a what you mentioned there is a way to account for it. Eventually that corn will come out, and that corn will be used either through the export or domestic channels.
Do you believe NASS has a good hand on the biologicals, in other words, the crop production yield number?
Based on their surveys, when we did the interview after the October report, the biggest fear or question that I think went through their minds was the test weight and what happens when you dry down 30% corn. I think that's the biggest challenge to overcome, because you can go out and count stalks, ears, kernels, and all that, but the test weight and what you lose in dry down is the unknown, and we'll probably see them revise that clear into September of next year.
Sherman, will we see deliveries in corn next week? I know when I looked earlier today, there was not a lot of corn registered for delivery, and I may be all wet on this, but I have a feeling that come Monday we may see a lot of deliveries, and the corn that we see delivered may be number three corn.
Yeah, you're very that could be right, Dave. I mean, the corn quality out there, you know, with the vomitoxin and everything that they're having, it is definitely an issue. The corn that will be delivered could very well be that type of corn where the other elevators don't want it.
Pete, some of the index funds are saying that in their reallocation, they intend to add more corn at the end of the year in the mix. I saw one index fund that has some 65,000 contracts that it is looking to reallocate. And that may be viewed as bullish. But on the other hand, speculators may want to take profits ahead of the end of the year. Who do you lean toward in winning this taffy pull in corn futures?
Well, I think the index funds, if they need to buy that many, we will see a sharp up, and then you will see the people take profits, so you see a sharp down. And that might be what we've seen for the last few days, you know, up 15 one day and down 15 the next. And it was the same people doing it. So I expect those funds, they're reallocating because of the amount that they're allowed to carry and make them go back within the rules. They did have 70% of their money in energies and metals. They're moving that down to the 30%, 35% range and bringing their grains up from 13 to 14% up into the 30, 35 range. So more money from index funds into the grains will cause more up moves at different times.
Kurt, some 30% of wheat has yet to be planted in the eastern Corn Belt. What does that do to the corn-soybean battle come spring?
Well, I don't know about that, but boy, the wheat is probably one of the more positive fundamentally markets to look at. Very little wheat got in here in the eastern belt. We like the Chicago-Kansas City July wheat spread. We feel there's 50 cents in that spread as we go into next spring as the trade grasp on the lower-than-expected soft red winter wheat acres.
In 2 minutes, we'll hear from Steve Elmore, Senior Agricultural Economist for Pioneer Hybrid International.
I'm Jim Angel, State Climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey within the Institute of Natural Resource Sustainability on the campus of the University of Illinois. Overall, this week has been on the warm side with temperatures 7.6 degrees above normal, and most of Illinois receiving less than an inch of rain during the week. So far, November is shaping up to be one of the 10 warmest Novembers on record, with temperatures 5.5 degrees above normal. Statewide records go back to 1895. At the same time, precipitation is near normal at 2.5 inches, 6% below normal. Much of the heavier rains in excess of 3 inches fell in central Illinois. The relatively mild November is in stark contrast to October, which was the second wettest and seventh coldest on record. It will come as no surprise that this year will be one of the wettest on record. Right now, the January through November precipitation total is 46.2 inches, making it the third wettest year to date on record. According to the National Weather Service, much of Illinois will be mild and sunny over the weekend, with a chance of rain on Monday. Daytime highs should be in the 40s and 50s with nighttime temperatures near the freezing mark. The long-range forecast model has a major system moving through Illinois on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week. With cold temperatures and lots of moisture, if it pans out, it could be the first significant winter storm of the season. The current seasonal outlook for winter from the National Weather Service calls for an increased chance of warmer than normal temperatures in the northern half of the state, while the southern half remains near normal. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm State Climatologist Jim Angel.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Sherman Newland, Kurt Kimmel, and Pete Manhart. Joining us by phone is Steve Elmore, Senior Agricultural Economist for Pioneer Hybrid International. Thanks for being with us today, Steve.
I'm glad to be here.
This is your first time on Commodity Week. Tell us a little about yourself.
I grew up in rural Nebraska. I went to school at University of Nebraska Kearney and graduate school at Texas A&M and University of Nebraska Lincoln. And then I was on research faculty at Iowa State University before coming to Pioneer 12 years ago.
And what do you do as senior agricultural economist for Pioneer?
I try as best we can in these economic conditions to give a pulse of what's happening with agriculture, not only what our farmers are seeing and customers, but how it looks going forward so that we can forecast needs for the farmers so we can plant our seed crop this year, figure out where to put research funds for the next, 10 years. So it's both short and long term.
Questions for Steve Elmore, Kurt Kimmel.
Steve, what type of conditions are you looking at in Iowa now as far as moisture and harvest progress?
Moisture's coming down. We're hearing that they're down to the 20% level. Harvest progress, especially corn, we're going to get a lot done this week we did. We did not miss the rain that came through. We've had rain the past couple days, so it's going to slow it down. I don't think there will be it'll be a while before they get back in the field. In Nebraska, they're going to wrap it up pretty good this upcoming week. They missed the rain showers. So in the Western Corn Belt, they're making up for what they paused the last couple weeks.
Pete Manhart.
When you're looking at this year's corn versus how many acres next year, what are you projecting or what are you looking at for next year's corn acreage?
If you look at futures price right now and the variability in the futures price, just look at the ratios. I think we all need to keep this into account. If you look at current futures price, it looks like flat corn acres, and that will not get enough. We have enough rising demand. We think the market will have to move between now and corn planting relative to beans, either beans coming down or corn coming up. Because if you have trend yields in 86.4 million acres, which is the same, we're going to take stocks to use ratio down to 9.4%, which is way too low. So we think, all in all, we think acres will come back up into the 88 range. However, the market's going to move a lot, and the macroeconomy, as you guys talked the first session, is going to be a big factor going forward.
Sherman Newland?
Steve, do you think the yield trends in corn will continue to keep rising?
I think it will depend a lot on what farmers' income is. If you talk historically, ask a farmer, you know, when it was in 2005, when they were getting loan rate prices, the LDPs were kicking in. You ask them if any farmer, can you increase your yields? And they said, yeah, I could probably increase 10%. However, when the margins are tight, they aren't able to do the same things. I think there is a bias upward for trends. I think the industry is set up to deliver higher trends with the genetics, but it's going to be highly dependent on farmers' margins going forward and how they can invest. It's more than just genetics, as we all know, that gets yield. It's how the management practices that farmers employ.
Steve, on Pete's question on acres, looking forward here, do you see a little bit more detailed on maybe less wheat acres, what they're going to do with those wheat acres, and two, with the late harvest activity, is there any special part of the regions you might see a shift?
I think your wheat acres, especially a lot of them are coming off of, especially in the soft red area, a lot of them are coming off of, you know, a soybean rotation. I think a lot of them, more of them, will go to corn. So you're going to get some there. You're also, we're down on hard red winter wheat. So we think, you know, if coming into the 1st of October, we're at 59 million acres of wheat, we currently think it might be 55, 56 million acres, given what is dropped both in the eastern corn belt and the western corn belt or wheat belt. A lot of it will go to corn, but soybeans are going to hang in there too. I think the big factor will be when we realize what the size of the South American crop is of soybeans. If we don't realize this till March, we're going to have some issues because, as we all know, the February average of the November futures sets the revenue insurance rate, and if we don't recognize it, we won't get those corn acres that we need, and we will decrease the stocks to use level going forward, and the velocity of the soybean price decline could be kind of quick.
My comment there was then that if South America grows this huge crop, which we right now think they have the possibility of doing, it could really set bean prices backward. But if it comes too late, it won't help us get more corn acres. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And what we talked about early too is not only the USDA the December crop report is not much use to the row crop producers or to us forecasting what acres of corn and beans are going to be. All of the numbers will come the 12th of January. And as you talked earlier, they're going to have to rebalance the first week of January, the index funds. So we're going to get a lot of movement, and it will all be macro movement from now till January. February, the USDA doesn't really release a report that really moves the commodity markets. So we got to wait till the end of February to their outlook conference around the 20th. So we don't really have a lot of chances to get a lot of good reports that are non-trend yield for South America. So what worries me is the lateness that we will get good data out of South America that will help govern what we plant in 2010 and set up for 2011. Will we be short in 2010 in the summer or into 2011?
Steve, with the slowness of harvest, I mean 68% harvested, record slowness, roughly 4 billion bushels of corn still not harvested. Do you think the trade's starting to get concerned about that in any way? And can we lose some bushels because of this lateness?
I think we will, but I think the way the USDA works, it'll go into residual category. So if the U.S. government or the USDA NAS comes out and says we produced this bigger crop, I think the economists, when it comes to them, they will put it in the residual category. So the stocks to use or the ending stocks number will not change as much as some would think.
Steve, in your research and studies, do you put together any price projections, what you might be looking for maybe March corn and March or January beans going into 2010 might look like?
We don't really. The big issue that we have, I could give you, we talk here about the prices a lot, and what we think, I could give you a dollar range, and it's all due to the macros. It's due to your unemployment. It's due to when the government will raise interest rates. And then what happens to the weak dollar, as you guys chronicled, what happens to oil prices. And that could move commodity price of corn a dollar, between $3.75 to $4.75, just due to the macros. We would not change the supply and use of the corn crop in and of itself. If you look at it, what has happened, we've had the current stocks to use or the current ending stocks of corn's number since July. It was 1.55 billion bushels. We're currently sitting at 1.625 billion. It's gone up as high as 1.67. However, their annual average, the USDA's annual average price, was at 375 for the crop that's being harvested. They dropped to 335 and are currently 355. With the current futures prices, they'll probably go up again on the annual average price. It's all due to macro numbers. It's not due to the fundamentals of the ag market.
Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Steve Elmore, Senior Agricultural Economist for Pioneer Hybrid International. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.